Welcome to On the Edge with April Mahoney Brains. Here, this is the spot where the conversations are pointed, the guests are sharp, and the responses are never dull. Did you bring your thinking caps? Because it's time to put them on. Because the conversation starts now.
It's not bad. It's a little overcast and pretty hot, but not too humid yet.
Welcome to On the Edge with April Mahoney Brains. You drop back in on the spot with me and Angela Owens. This is the place where the conversation gets pointed, the guests are super sharp, and the responses are never dull. We are going to talk to Angela about all good things nursing and also poetry, where the two intersect. Because it's all about love, it's all about communication, it's all about feelings, and it's all about expressing yourself. And that's the area that Angela is working on right now. You know, she was traditionally a bedside nurse. Now she's moved more into administrative role, but her heart and her passion is still bedside with the nurses. There's been a lot going on in the news. These nurses are getting prosecuted for giving, mix up on medication. And Brains, we pray and hope that it never happens to us. But we are all human beings and we all make a mistake. And if you realized the amount of stress, well, y'all know, because they was dropping, you know, like flies during COVID. Nobody wants to be bedside and then be mistreated and then go to jail. So we're going to talk to her about how we can work with these nurses to kind of keep them in the profession, love on them, but also to have work-life balance. And I say we stop with this 12, 14-hour shift. That's the first thing we need to do. But anyway. How are you, Angela? Welcome to On the Edge.
Thank you so much, April. I'm doing great. It's a lot of heaviness in that topic, you know?
It's a lot of weight, absolutely. And you guys carry a heavy load. Teachers and nurses are my favorite people on the planet. You get it. You know, and you think, or I tell my nurse all the time when I go, if it's just for a routine blood draw, thank you, I appreciate it. Because she didn't have to, you know, put herself in that predicament. You touching people's itchy BBs and coochie wallies and they're mean to you and their family's mean to you and you got the pressure of the doctors and your traveling nurse. Help. Tell us a little bit about your experience in that space and where you are now.
Sure, I'd love to. So I started my career a little later. I started as a nurse when I was 27. I graduated with a Bachelor's of Science in Nursing. And, you know, I went straight into a critical care unit. It was a very nurturing environment, thankfully. And I didn't experience at first a lot of what you hear nurses say that we eat our young. I didn't experience that as much in that environment. Everyone wanted me to learn. They wanted me to, you know, be able to be the best I could, which was wonderful. Fast forward a couple of job changes later, icky divorce, a remarriage to an amazing support man in the military. And, I moved with two small children, a new marriage, no family support. And I went to a hospital in the military town, and the only thing I could get was night shift in a unit that I wasn't familiar with. I went from cardiac care to neurological care, which was night and day different. And it was unfamiliar, uncomfortable. And at the time, I was one of 40 nurses in the nation with the specialty certifications that I held in critical care and cardiac medicine. And I couldn't get into, you know, the area that I loved, even though there were openings. So it was kind of baffling to me. The other thing that surprised me is there was no support. So my husband was in a role where he had to travel frequently and without much notice. And again, with two small kids at home, no support system, my supervisor told me, you know, just leave the kids with a neighbor. Yeah. Wait, what? And you're working 12-hour shifts.
That's
and it's
what
not
I
just
said.
12 hours.
I,
you know,
that's
it's
what
more.
I just said, these 12 and 14 hour shifts. Please.
It's good and bad. It's a double-edged sword, right? you know, you can't have kids in childcare for 12 hours a day or more, especially not overnight. You know, there just wasn't that type of, there's no support in those types of positions. And that was the only option there, which, you know, when I was working 12 hours and I did have a support system for my children, it wasn't a problem. Mm-hmm. I had three on and four off. I can't do math in my head all of a sudden.
I get you. And that was a lot of time. I know that. Okay. So you're in this headspace. You're working in a specialty that is really not your forte. You've got the pressures of everything that's going on. But tell me a little bit about the joy of the job, because it's not all bad, because you wouldn't do it and you wouldn't have done it and sacrificed your mental health, your marriage, your children, if you didn't love what you do. Tell me what you loved about nursing.
Oh my goodness. There's so many things. So having a patient come in who is very sick, possibly, you know, at death's door, and being able to assess and take care of that patient as they are turned around and are able to go home many times feeling better than they did when they even came in, mm-hmm. is having the ability to provide some comfort, even in times that weren't so bright, when someone maybe wasn't going to make it. And what the family needed most was just to know that someone was there and someone cared. And someone cared that their loved one wasn't going to be there anymore. Mm-hmm. It's really hard, but your heart has to be in it in order to deal with those things.
Let me tell you why I love nurses so much, because your heart is into it. When you walk into that room and you see that nurse is just giving your mother something to eat, or wiped her mouth, or wiped her bottom, or just came in there to say good morning, you know, it is makes all the difference. And you put on that happy face no matter what. You suppress that. And again, you see life and death every day. Every day, if it's an infant, or if it's a terrible accident, or if it's someone just transcending. And you are an angel. And the reason why I say that too is because you help them through that portal of life and death. Hospice, Brains, let me tell you, hospice, they would call me when my mother was in hospice here at my home and ask me, did I need something from the store? Girl, they loved on me something fierce. They didn't have to do that. And my mother was excited to see her nurse. And I know the sacrifice that you do. So there has to be a lot of joy. But there's a lot of technology involved in there too. See, Brains, it's not just taking the temperature and giving the medicine. You got to learn how to read these heart machines and all these different diagnostics. That's a whole nother skill set within itself. Am I right?
You're completely right. And it evolves continuously. It's always evolving. And even the wearables that patients come in with, like insulin pumps, you know, those types of things are also always evolving. And you're like, wow, I need to learn about
that. And the diabetes, you know, I feel sorry for the seniors that aren't technologically savvy, because my mother wasn't. And they had given her a new machine that had to be attached to the computer so that they could download. And she said, I'm not even going to do it. And I was like, wow. So I, you know, faster, smarter, quicker, then that means two or three more beds we can fill. There's a lot of money. Sick people make money. You know, there's no doubt about it. I get that. And I understand what it is. I thank God that I'm in a country and I have benefits that take care of me. I'm a military spouse too. So I understand what TRICARE is and all that. But just think about the people that just can't get their medicines. You know, it's crazy.
We're actually facing that with our oldest daughter. We can cover her. She's 24. She'll be 25 this year. As long as she's a full-time student, we can cover her until she's 26. She's a type 1 diabetic. So she has an insulin pump. She has a continuous glucose monitor. And when you look at the cost of those components alone, much less her monthly insulin requirements, it's astronomical without insurance. So that's frightening. And then you look at this, though, that, you know, to keep her compliant and her hemoglobin A1C at a nice level costs so much less than one admission into the ICU in diabetic ketoacidosis. Mm-hmm. So why is it such a problem for insurance companies to cover all of these supplies and things that keep our diabetic patients compliant? I don't understand it. Why is that such a huge problem? And she said the thing that made me sad. She said, "Mom, it's probably because they think it's cheaper to have us die."
Oh.
And, you know, that's sad that
that's heartbreaking.
A young person's perception coming up in this world. It shouldn't be like that.
Well, you remember,
people before profits.
Was it a year ago or 2 years ago? They tripled the amount for insulin.
Yes.
You know, supply and demand. Okay, but that's a whole nother show. So let's talk about the coaching that you're doing.
Yes.
You are really kind of teaching these other nurses to weather the storm. And nurses, I'm scolding you. Somebody told me there's a big bullying problem with nurses. I don't want to hear it. I was in Kaiser with my mother. Shout out to Kaiser. I love Kaiser. I was there with my mother, and the team in the emergency room worked together like a symphony. They were magic. Can I check on this patient for you? Hey, you want a cup of coffee? Hey, this, hey, that. There was no kerfuffle. Everybody just seemed to work. That's what I want to see, brains. That's what, I don't care if you're there 14 hours. Okay, you're with that other coworker as if you were with your spouse. You better treat them right. Don't let me come in there and catch you acting up. I'll put you on the edge.
Oh, gosh. That really hits a nerve because we see it and we hear it all the time. So, you know, I transitioned into nursing education when I wasn't getting the support I needed within the hospital system. And, you know, I found that it was really wonderful to be able to help students and mentor students and help them to, you know, find their niche that they needed in order to be successful, fulfilled, and happy with their profession. And, you know, what breaks my heart more than anything is to have students feel that they're in the way and that they're not wanted. And, you know, I understand where that perception comes from a little bit, because when you are overwhelmed, when you're not getting the leadership support you need within the hospital system, and that will empower you not to feel overwhelmed and stretched thin, when your staffing is adequate to take care of the patients on the floor, then you have a more open reception to helping students and to learning. I've seen some really amazing nurses who loved students and loved to work with them just feel burnt out by having another student come in because they were overwhelmed with their patient load. Whoever was in charge wasn't taking the acuity of the patients into account. Or, you know, we see it with sometimes the travel nurses, and I'm sure this has been said before, but they feel like they get the short end of the stick when it comes to staffing and acuity. Well, they get the worst patients and the worst families.
Yeah, the thing is I rent a property out to mobile nurses. And my challenge is they all want to travel with a pet. Because that, I mean, the pet is comforting, but I ain't having no pets in my place. Okay, but I you know, and I understand that. I totally understand that. But it's cruel, too, because it's 14 hours that you're gone, you know. So it doesn't do any benefit. But we're getting a lot of nurses that are coming from other countries. I know during, again, my mother's visit, a large percentage of the nurses were coming from the Philippines, from Mexico. Well, I don't know, but they're just saying that their procedure for nursing is more accelerated than what they're providing here in the U.S. It's more cost effective for them to get that and still have transferable skills coming from Canada. So I appreciate them as well, because again, it's a language, it's a culture, you're leaving your family. It's a lot. But what I want to talk to you about, Angela, is I want three takeaways, three action items that we can incorporate, that we can support, that we can stand behind when we talk to, you know, because they send me a survey. They get on my nerve with them cotton picking surveys, and I fill them out, okay? And I'm going to tell you how I feel because you're getting my money. What can I tell them to support my nurses? Three things that they can do, the administration.
The first thing is people who are placed into administration or hired into administration need to have an understanding of what it is to be a nurse. There needs to be a true understanding there. And they also need to have leadership training. So those are two big things, because I've seen it happen before where you have an outstanding nurse at bedside and she's promoted into maybe the unit manager role and quickly gets burnt out in the unit manager role because she never had any education or training in regards to leadership. And it's a whole different ball game when you're taken from bedside and put into that unit manager type role without any of those leadership skills or even management skills that you need in order to be effective. So that's a big one, is make sure that your nurse leaders are getting the leadership and management training they need to be able to be successful.
Okay.
Secondly, is, and this is a big one, ask your nurses what they need. Don't assume. Don't listen to a podcast, for example, and hear them talking about things that leadership needs to do to keep employees engaged and think that that's automatically going to work. You know, we do appreciate the pizza parties and we appreciate the ice cream and stuff, but, you know, don't mandate our wellness. Don't mandate our fun. Find a way to find out what your nurses really need and really want in order to feel supported.
I know, you know, that's, they used to do
that's
come
huge.
Up with- They come up with creative things when I was in work and I was never in nursing, but it would be like, you know, 3 hours off with pay. That could make all the difference. You know, it could be a certificate. It could be a dinner. It could just be, some people just want a pat on the back.
Yeah. Thank you.
Exactly.
A sincere one.
But again, like, that's huge. Ask me what I want. Don't just assume, you know, I don't need pizza. I can buy my own doggone pizza. And what's the third thing, Angela?
And the third thing is we need to provide assistance to our nurses in regards to emotional resilience and how to get past those feelings of, you know, being burned out.
Okay. So when you say burnout, that's a big $25 word. What do you mean? Yeah, it is. So when you say, you know, because it encompasses a lot of things. Are you tired of going to work? Is it stress because of the patients? Because those families, one of my other nurses told me that the cotton picking patient bitter. I was like, you know, and then the family will come and cuss you out as if you're the Lord and Savior. You're doing the very best that you can. And some people aren't going to make it. We're all organic brains. We're all going to expire. But you want to blame Angela, her team, and the doctors for what God has already set in motion. So, you know, think about that. When I go in, my mother said, there's two things you don't do. You don't mess with three things. You don't mess with her man, you don't mess with her medicine, and you don't mess with her food. You know, and she lived to be 91. But you take that into consideration when you're in the hospital and you're going ham on the nurse. Remember, that person is giving you your next injection. And if not that they're going to do any harm to you, but if they are not in a clear emotional state, anything can happen. And they've got 5 to 6 people at a time on the floor, critical care, urgency, the doctor calling, texting, yada, yada. Girl, y'all should get, you get every penny. So I ask you that too. How much do nurses get paid?
Oh gosh, that's a wide variety.
Really?
You know, it's not standard. And of course, what you'll read in the news and everything lately is travel nurses are making an astronomical amount more than the nurses who are staying. You know, I hate to say this, but it doesn't pay to be loyal. Because if you, I mean, within a year I started, I mean, this is a long time ago, I'm going to date myself. When I started nursing as a bachelor's prepared nurse, I was making $16.50 an hour. I had left a job in a manufacturing plant driving a forklift.
With your cute self.
where I made $20 an hour.
Wow.
With no degree. Mm. So I went to nursing making $16.50 an hour. Within a year, they were hiring new grads on and paying them more than me. So it was a very frustrating, you know, situation. And that from what I hear, that situation still remains. So that's frustrating. So when you talk about burnout and
what is burnout? Let's talk about the business. Okay. Cause nursing is a business. Okay. The big hospitals, nonprofits, insurance companies, but they leave the nurses to be sloppy seconds. So what I would add to your list, number four, would learn to negotiate. Learn to speak up for who you are, because now we need you. Supply and demand. You can put your price out there. Document what you do, your experience. You've got references, how many hours, all this. Oh, your package, your last eval. Go in there locked and loaded and let them have it. All they can do is say no. And if they need you, they're not going to say no. So learn how to negotiate. You know what my mother had a challenge with? And she was 91 now. Male nurses and female doctors. She still had those gender roles, you know, in place. And what is it like with diversity, equity, and inclusion in the nursing space right now? Because it's a whole lot going on. And people feel a certain kind of way if a person maybe has a different, you know, gender identification and they're going in and they're dealing with their grandmother. They don't want that. It's very difficult. You can't even really be yourself. You can't. You got to send your representative.
Well, you know, that's a tricky line to walk, because you want to care for the patient, right? And I was taught that, you know, I need to overlook the rudeness and sometimes the disrespect from some of the patients, just because they're, and I can kind of get this, because they're in a state of crisis. Mm-hmm. They're in the hospital. You know, they don't want to be there. They're out of control. The one thing they can control is, you know, how they're being rude to you sometimes. And I try to think of it this way. It's not coming from a place of necessarily ill will. You know, some people were raised, you know, very traditional values. Mm-hmm. Male doctor, female nurse.
My mom.
and then you have some people in the Deep South who were raised, well, don't send an African-American nurse into my room. Mm-hmm. They're not allowed in here. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you still see some of those stereotypes perpetuated occasionally, and it's very disheartening. And
it is, but you know what? Sometimes when you're not feeling good, you don't need no confusion.
That's true.
And my mother, you know, my mother would end up saying, because she would have, I don't know what it was, but she would have some of the best looking nurses. And we go in there, she said, yeah. She said, well, I don't mind. She's cute. And I said, Mama, do you remember anything about the procedure? I just remember that cute boy nurse. But open your heart, right? Because they're there to take care of you. But again, if it's not your vibe, don't be rude and disrespectful. Just tell the administration that, can we shift this because I feel X, Y, Z. And if they want you to get well, they will do it. But don't torture and disrespect somebody that's coming in there to give you food, wipe your butt, and give you medication. Don't do that.
No.
Okay? Don't. Families, get your head around this. Remember that medicine is not a perfect science. They are practicing medicine. They are a practitioner. Did you hear that, Brains? They are a medical practitioner. I'm speaking for me. I can't speak for the industry. And you smiling, so you get what I'm saying. All right? So take that into consideration. Be your own advocate when you go in there. Have your paperwork together, your living will and trust. They don't know if to resuscitate you or not. What does that look like to resuscitate someone at 90 years old and crush their chest? And then you blame the hospital. You know.
What does that feel like to have to do it?
Right.
Because the family won't accept that it's time.
Right.
I had one family tell me after we had probably broken every rib in this poor gentleman's body, the family said, you know, I was trying to talk to them about a DNR, do not resuscitate. And they're like, well, when God's ready for him to go, you won't be able to bring him back again.
Have you seen us here for the last 5 hours, what we've been doing here? You know?
Yeah.
But it's hard. Again, I get it. I'm not trying to desensitize, but I'm going to tell you something, Brains. When my mother passed away, it was the most beautiful transition because she was there with me. She wasn't the patient in 504, the person at a nursing home that's just been cleaned up, the place that's understaffed and not taking care of people, the place that doesn't have insurance. She was here with me. I got to lay my chest on her chest and feel her last heartbeats. I got to watch the nurse teach me how to give her morphine to make her breathing less laborious, that she could go on and go with the angels. And when she closed her eyes, I kid you not, I saw that soul separate from the body. Okay? So the work that you do, Angela, and the team is not in vain. And if you love it, don't give up on it. You fight for it. You fight for it with all your might. Legislation, boycotting, asking for more money, you know, all of that kind of stuff. Don't let them take advantage of you. Oh, I have to get off my soapbox. I'm sorry. I get all emotional because, I tell you, it's like teachers. You know, teachers didn't sign up to be bulletproof vests and mass monitors.
Yeah.
And then you don't want to get vaccinated. And then we lost a lot of nurses here in California because they didn't want to get vaccinated. So they said, okay, so you know, higher tenure, you got 10, 12 years, adios, and got rid of them. I kind of understand at Children's Hospital, you know, the pandemic was just way out of control. But then too, this, you know, like the flu shot, they're mandated to get the flu shot. You know, so you guys are test dummies. But the way that the pandemic first hit and all this gear that you was wearing and all that and the hours that you were working, I don't know. But again, like I said, I think the nurses are better than doctors. Yes, I said it.
We're a team.
You are. Okay, so now, as we conclude, we want to end it on a high note. We want to hear from you, from one of your other passions, and it's poetry. Tell me how you started writing poetry, and she's going to do the reading for us, Brains.
So I started writing poetry probably in elementary school. It just was something that, in order to kind of deal with emotions and things, I would just put stuff down on paper. And I didn't really realize what it was until I was getting older and just, you know, writing more. And so anytime I needed to take a look within and reflect on, you know, a certain situation, I would turn to writing. Inspiration comes in a variety of places. And many times my inspiration was in sadness. So in like the death of a family member or a friend, and I would write feelings about that. And so it was also something that would help me cope through nursing when I would lose someone or I wasn't able to, you know, affect the outcome that I really wanted for that patient and that family.
Right.
In order to process it, I would write. And, you know, it became just a real passion. And something I didn't realize until later in life was that my dad was also a poet. So he had written a lot of poetry as well. I haven't gone through his file of poems. He passed in 2009, and like you, I was there with him, and I heard it. I felt his last heartbeat, and I saw him leave. It was the most amazing and beautiful thing ever.
I mean, you know, again, people say, oh, that's kind of boring. I'm not hooping and hollering. I'm trying to figure out, and she was so peaceful, and I'll tell you, her spirit spoke to me. Because about 3 or 4 days later, I said, oh, Mama, I said, I miss you so. She said, it's nice up here.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yes. And here we are still dealing with the COVID.
Well, I have to show you.
That's crazy. But you know what would be beautiful? Is if you did a collaboration between you and your father's poetry in a book. Oh, that would be great. And I want a copy. I would. So you know, give us the reading. Let us know what you're going to read for us.
Okay. I'm going to read a poem that I wrote a long time ago. And it was one of the first ones that I wrote that really made me think, I might actually have something here. And my teachers loved it too. So, but it's called Falling Star.
Falling Star?
I have a confession. I've never read one of my poems before.
Okay, well, let me tell you, you are among poets. I'm a poet. Hand claps and finger snaps. We send you love, light, and energy. Just go ahead and do your thing. Take your time and breathe through it. We want to feel it.
The clouds seem to descend upon me as the mist swirls around. Silver moonlight illuminates the shroud with myriad glimmers. Dead leaves dance upon the wind to the song of the stars. I stand gazing wistfully at the midnight sky. A single star leaves its place in heaven to tumble to the earth. Stardust glitters behind it as the tears of morning on the face of night. Mine were the only eyes to follow its path to earth, bearing significance only to me.
You know, I feel a certain innocence in that reading, that you were very vulnerable when you wrote it, and that you were looking for something to fall out of the sky. Well, it did, and it fell upon your heart. Thank you for that. I appreciate that. Please tell my brains how to get in contact with you, Angela, if they want to, you know, get on one of these action items. Like I said, brains, I wrote them down. Leadership training, asking the nurses for what they need, and assistance with emotional resilience, and my fourth, negotiation. This is a great resource. This is a great person that is coaching, still in this space, that understands on both sides, be it from the, you know, at bedside or the administrative. I think that she's a fabulous negotiator. She's heart-centered, and she can give you what you need. Tell them, Angela, how to get in contact with you, please.
Absolutely. Thank you, April. So I am at dr.owens@executivecoaching.com.
Okay. Give that to them one more time. Dr. Owens at O2executivecoaching.com.
Right?
Go in and just have a conversation with her. You don't know what you don't know. Didn't she say, ask the nurse? She's going to tell you what you need. She's got the prescription. Well, she may not write the prescription, but she's going to give it to you. Right here on the edge. Thank you so much. I was passionate. I love you for being open, honest, and vulnerable, reading poetry. And again, being selfless, helping others, even on the administrative side versus being there bedside. Brains, now go help yourself. Go back and love, like, share, and subscribe to On the Edge. Where's your postcard, Angela?
Let me find it. Sorry.
She's a brain on the
edge.
Right there. Love, like, and share. Support your nurses. Maybe even go to school to be a nurse. Maybe volunteer some leadership and executive training. That'd be helpful. Thank you again, Angela. Come back and visit me. Keep me updated, all right?
Thank you.
All right, you're the best. Bye, brains.